The SoCal Sound Sessions are listener and member supported. Please consider becoming a subscribing member. Click subscribe now at the top of the SoCalSound.org and make sure to choose live sessions from the drop-down menu.
Hey everybody, welcome. This is Cliff Beach at 88.5 The SoCal Sounds, The SoCal Sound Sessions, and tonight we have in the hot seat Mr. Marcus King here to talk about his new album, Mood Swings, and we're super excited to have him live in studio. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Man, glad to be here. Glad to be here. Super excited to chat about your new latest record, just came out in April, Mood Swings, and you had the pleasure of working with Rick Rubin, who's Mr. Creativity. So how did that come about?
Man, I got pretty much just cold called by Rick back in 2019. I just played the Grand Ole Opry for the first time, and he saw some footage from that performance, and he was moved by it, and he felt compelled to reach out to me. And you know, when he did, it was fairly serendipitous. I was in between label deals, and I was in between publishing, and you know, we started working together in that, you know, capacity, and it just felt super natural and very organic the way that it just kind of progressed into us working together as a producer and an artist. And you know, that just kind of developed over a couple of year process, you know.
And so obviously people know all of his work with Beastie Boys and with Johnny Cash, and later Johnny Cash, especially with doing covers of Nine Inch Nails and stuff like that. So when going into the creative process, working with someone like that, knowing kind of you wanted to change your sound for this album, like, what was your thinking in making Mood Swings?
Well, I mean, going into it, like, Rick was really the perfect guy for this record because, I mean, he really helped me to dive deeper than I ever had before into the, you know, crevasses of one's inner thinking, you know, and just, it was really as much, it did as much for me musically as it did for me mindfully, you know, and it forced me to kind of have a reckoning with some parts of yourself that you're uncomfortable with, and you know, have a little bit of self-awareness and reflection on, you know, being a fuck up, I guess.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I know when Adele was working on one of her records, she sent it to him, and he was like, "Oh, I think you're kind of phoning it in. You could dig a little deeper." Did he encourage you to dig a little deeper too on this project?
Yeah, he did. When we first listened to the demos that I initially came out there with, one of the songs called "Bipolar Love," and he just really adored that song, and he was like, "Everything needs to be like this." And he was very happy with that song. And, you know, granted, it's like, I don't think it's either of our favorite track on the record, but he just appreciated the vulnerability and the honest nature of the song. And Rick and I both had the idea on this album to, because when you got a throwback sound, which is not, I don't really like the term throwback, because it's really, you know, I just sing American music, you know. I like gospel, blues, soul, rock and roll. I like all that. So, I mean, throwback, maybe. But anyway, he's really into the idea of, like, you need to add a modern component to this throwback so people can kind of feel it is present and it's happening now. Mm-hmm. So you don't want it to seem like it's lost in the annals of history. So we thought that the lyrical content could be the modern component. And that's where Bipolar kind of became the gold standard for everything we'd, you know, work forward towards. And I wrote for like a year, like 6 months, like, and we didn't use any of it. You know, it was a really kind of a frustrating period. Mm. And it's because I kind of had to break that bad habit of trying to write for the audience and then learned how to write for myself again.
That's amazing. And so through that whole process of writing, now you had previously in the last record been nominated for a Grammy and Americana for El Dorado. Mm. So was that part of your thinking process? Do you think anything about awards and stuff where you're doing it, or like, no, I'm just trying to please myself?
No, definitely not thinking about awards. You know, it's a nice way to be validated for your efforts by your peers and, you know, by people you look up to. But it's definitely not, it's not something that I think about when I'm making music, because that would really get us further away from the true meaning of why we do it, you know. Like, being able to play is just such a blessing. And being able to write and express yourself through this medium is just, it's powerful. It's stronger than anything I could explain.
Yeah, it's that catharsis of getting those feelings and deeper emotions out there, and you get that transference of feeling, obviously, playing it on the record, but then also playing it live now that you're on tour as well.
Yeah, it's like a, it's a whole other, you know, metaphysical realm that we tap into every night, and this level of transcendentalism that we can reach in playing because we're so comfortable with it and with each other, me and the band. And I mean, the band is just really, really cooking. Like, on the record, we had Chris Dave on drums, who's insane, so good.
The drum heads, yeah.
He's amazing. And, you know, he played on a lot of Adele's stuff, mm-hmm. The stuff Rick did anyway. And Corey Henry was on a Hammond organ and electric keyboards. And I made my, I played piano on one song on the tracking called Delilah. And I had to play piano in front of Corey Henry, which was the worst. I hated it.
He was a monster.
And that was also a weird day too, because Rick was in Costa Rica and he was producing via, there were GoPros everywhere. And he could obviously hear us because there's microphones. And he was just like omnipresent. It was kind of bizarre. So it was a weird day. But my boys on the road, I mean, I'd never take anybody else with me. They're crushing the songs. It sounds great live.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to hearing more about that. I know we're going to be playing some songs live in the studio today. Mm-hmm. The first song that we're going to talk about is Save Me. That's from the record. So tell our listeners what that song is about.
Well, you know, the, how do I put this? Like, the sequencing of the record is fairly chronological. And we went back and forth on the sequencing like 14 or 15 versions, you know, because I wanted to get it just right so you could really take the story in the right way. And Save Me, I wrote like 6 or 7 years ago. And it was early on in my last relationship. And, you know, I guess at the time I didn't really understand or realize what it really meant for me, but it's really about codependency, you know. That's kind of what it's about at the core. Because I was in a really terribly codependent relationship, and we were both fairly codependent. And also, there was a lot of substance abuse involved, and, you know, it was a very passionate relationship. So when we ran hot, we ran hot. And then, you know, when we made up really great. And that, you kind of get addicted to that cycle.
Sure.
And especially if you're prone to addiction anyway. You know, I just kind of binged out on her love and got addicted to that cycle of, like, you know, I needed her to save me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, any good therapist will tell you that you gotta save yourself first. And that, I mean, that's really just the whole, like, theme of the record is, it kind of all comes back to that. The theme of the record is, like, you know, when the oxygen mask is dropped, you gotta put yours on first. And whether it be about the lyrical content, like about the relationships I went through, or, you know, just making music as a whole, like putting the audience last, it was kind of something I had to relearn, you know.
Yeah. Well, this is 88.5, the SoCal Sound Sessions with Marcus King. We're talking about Mood Swings, the new album that's out now. We're going to get into his first song, Hero. Listen up.
Your soft green eyes never told me any lies, but your lips have turned me right time to. Prove that you were wrong.
We're back still with Marcus King at 885 The SoCal Sound Sessions. We just listened to Save Me, and we're still talking about his latest record that came out in April, Mood Swings. He's on tour right now. So give it up again for Marcus King. Now, continuing on, you have the Curfew Foundation that you just launched recently to support musicians that are facing mental health and addiction challenges, which ties into the thematic album of Mood Swings. So what does that have to do with what you're currently doing?
Right. So Curfew, that was a nickname given to a friend of mine, Matt Reynolds. He took his own life back in 2017, and we were all really kind of taken aback by that. It was pretty unexpected, and you know, it was at a time when we were losing a lot of artists to that same thing, and we named it after him because, you know, my friend Charles Hedgepath and I decided we wanted to start this nonprofit to create like an outreach for artists to be able to, have a community and just kind of destigmatize the whole idea of depression and all this, and just make a space for artists to go where they could kind of be heard, because that's a really important factor of it. And now, you know, it's really exciting, you know, been teaming up with people like 1 Million Strong and Stand Together Music, and finally, like, getting the Curfew Foundation off the ground, because we kind of started the process in 2019, and taking a couple of years off for the pandemic, like, it just kind of got pushed to the back burner, and now we're kind of back, and we're just finally getting it ramped up. It's exciting.
Definitely, yeah, and it's always just great to give back and to help people. And also, it's a very noble cause, so thank you so much for doing that.
Absolutely.
And there's no shortage of people who need help, so hopefully they'll be able to get information, resources. Mm-hmm. And from that, you also have your family reunion festival that's coming back after a hiatus during the pandemic, so that's exciting, right?
Yeah, man, family reunion's coming back. We're so pumped. And this will be the first year we're doing it in South Carolina.
Very cool.
The first three were in North Carolina, and we're finally back on the home turf.
Nice. And that's where you're from, in South Carolina originally, right?
Yep.
And so you come from a musical family, your grandfather and your father, you have an amazing storied Gibson guitar from the 60s that you're using, Big Red. So tell me a little bit about, I guess, your musical background and growing up and getting into music.
Yeah. I, my grandfather played country and western his whole life. And his father before him, they all played like old time Appalachian, you know, folk music. Mm-hmm. And, I was really blessed to grow up in that atmosphere. And also to have a supportive family, because they all supported their families by playing music professionally, you know. So they looked at it as an earnest career.
Right.
Just how, like, you know, to me, you watch documentaries about, like, these, you know, tribes, and, like, when a boy's of a certain age, mm-hmm. he goes out and hunts with the men, and right. that's kind of how my family was, but it was just honky-tonking, you know. So once you reach a certain age, it's like you go out and you play, and that's kind of how you earn your wage.
Sure.
You know, so it was viewed as a viable source of income, so I was encouraged to explore it and to take it as far as I could. And I remember I lost a lot of band members to college, you know, like their parents were like, all right, you know, that was fun.
Right.
But now you need to go get into computer software.
Sure.
And, you know, that's cool too.
Yeah.
But it wasn't for me.
Yeah. So it was something you just knew, you felt very early on.
Yeah, I never had any second guess about it. I mean, my wife will tell you I'm no good at anything else, dude. I mean, I don't know. I'm not very handy around the house, so.
They got people for that.
Yeah.
So good. You're handy with a guitar, with an axe. But it's cool because, so growing up, you had obviously learning from the best, your family. But besides that, what did you listen to and who did you try to, like, emulate, or who are your heroes or influences?
Right. Man, I had no shortage of heroes growing up. I mean, aside from just being, around my grandfather and my dad and my uncles, and they played with so much feel, and I was always inspired by them.
Sure.
And you know, my dad put me on to the Allman Brothers really early, and like Lynyrd Skynyrd, like their early stuff, because they were just such a fucking good rock and roll band, mm-hmm. and the Marshall Tucker Band, and like mm-hmm. these incredible like Southern rock and roll bands, and like being inspired by the Allman Brothers and Marshall Tucker, Skynyrd, these are groups that, you know, came from like not far from me. Marshall Tucker Band was from Spartanburg. I'm from Greenville, and you know, we share a water tower, so, and an airport. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's like tangible. I can see it. I'm like, these guys came from here and they sold out the Garden, you know, in the 70s. So, you know, it was really inspiring to me, and it kind of gave me the idea that I could really do something with it. And I was also inspired by, I was really into Janis Joplin, and I really loved Tina Turner. Mm-hmm. Temptations were a really big one for me. Heart. Mm-hmm. Robin Trower, that's the first record I bought in a record store, because I had a record collection that was given to me from my dad. But the first record I went out and bought with my own money was Robin Trower, Bridge of Sighs, because I liked the cover.
Cool.
And it's the first record I smoked pot to. You know, it's just like one of those records, man. So, one that I grew up with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as you were coming up, because I've been a fan of you for a number of years, I actually learned about you watching some of your online content. You had a big social media and YouTube presence, and I saw, I think, something you did with Jam in the Van, and you were doing stuff with Relics and other stuff. But how do you, I guess, translate what you do into like video medium versus just the purely audio versus live?
Right. Man, that's a great question. Like, content, you know, I hate that word. I get so worn out on it, man. And I've started to develop a process, because I try to stay off social media, but it's kind of a double-edged sword, because I'm trying to offer the public something completely genuine and completely non-contrived and just honest content, right? And like, there's like certain TikToks or whatever that go viral, or whatever you want to call it, and it's because like you could tell in the TikTok that my wife has like coerced me into doing this Kim Kardashian voiceover thing, and you know, people just can feel that, and it's hilarious to see like me and my band doing a Kardashian's voiceover, and people love that. I mean, just like not taking ourselves too seriously, mm-hmm. that's a big thing for sure. But just, it's all about intention, you know. Same with the set. Like, if you're coming from the right place, I think people are going to pick up on it.
Definitely. And you mentioned your wife a few times. So you recently did get married last year, I believe, right? Huge, yeah. Lavish ceremony, I heard.
God, it was crazy. It was so over the top. And that's, my wife is just, she's over the top. I love that girl. She's really, she kind of offsets me. She kind of brings me back down when I need it.
Right.
Yeah, we had a marching band introduce us to the ceremony.
Very cool.
Which was wild. It was all her plan.
Yeah.
She said I was in control of the music, and that's all I did, really.
That's the best job.
And I asked my good friend Nigel Hall to come.
Oh, he's amazing. Yeah. That is. Yeah. I've chatted with him. He's great.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Man, you just keep such good company. I'm not surprised, but that's amazing. And so do you think marriage or relationships have gotten into this record as well?
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. Somebody asked me recently, you know, which song Briley most recently inspired. And, you know, she inspired me to be able to, some songs you're not able to write them in the moment. You kind of have to look at them retrospectively. And, you know, she, just being as good as she is to me, like, just gave me the courage to be able to finish a couple songs that I was having trouble finishing, you know? Mm-hmm. I have not yet figured out how to really write a song, like a happy song, quote unquote, without it feeling like it's commerce.
Yeah. You know?
I don't know. It has to be genuine.
And right.
I struggle with depression every day, so I don't know, man. Someday I'll write a happy song, and it'll likely be about her.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to hearing that. I know you got many more records inside you to come. So we're going to get back into the record. You're playing another live session with us right now. The song Delilah. And now Delilah obviously has good and bad connotations depending on how you pick it. Yeah. How are you seeing it?
Right. Well, that's another one that I wrote like 6 years ago with Gabe Lee. And I got to the writing session and we'd kind of just gotten paired together. In Nashville, sometimes, like, publishing houses just set you up, like, it's like a blind date, truly. And you get in there, and sometimes the chemistry's just not right on a date, and, like, maybe they're rude to the server, and you don't like that, and you're like, well, this is not great. This isn't going well.
Yeah.
But then maybe there's a physical chemistry that happens, and it's like, I can really, you know, kind of draw the same, like, you know, there's really a lot of parallels in like dating and writing. And when I got there, like he and I just really didn't get off on the right foot, I guess. He was like, I don't really do co-writes and like, you know, it's not really my thing. And my publisher wanted me to come in. And he just had a bad attitude.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, hey man, you know, I'm gonna be here for 2 hours and we can write a song or we can fuck off, I don't know. Like, we don't have to. And you know, he sat at the piano and like Delilah just kind of spilled out of us. It was just something we both really desperately needed to say. And that was the vehicle that we needed to say it. And, you know, at the time it was so stream of consciousness, you know, like the story is pretty simple story, but it kind of was a story that we wrote and then I went out and I lived it for the next 6 years. And it wasn't until I lived it that I was able to record it honestly, you know. I just kind of had it. I was like, this is a pretty catchy number, but, you know, I can't really find a good spot for it, you know. And when I went in and did this record with Rick, like, we found a good home for it. Because I'd lived it, I'd felt it, and I'd lost really profoundly, so.
Well, excellent. I'm looking forward to hearing it live. This is 88.5, the SoCal Sound Sessions with Marcus King talking about the album Mood Swings, and we're getting to his next song, Delilah. Check it out.
Do it.
Never saw it coming.
And we're back. This is 88.5 The SoCal Sound, your host Cliff Beach. And these are the SoCal Sound Sessions with Marcus King talking about his latest, greatest record, Mood Swings, which is out now on all streaming platforms. And so to continue, where can people go? I guess, what's your favorite song from the album?
Man, my favorite song from the record, I'd have to say Fuck My Life Up Again.
Okay.
You know, that's one that kind of rattled around for a while in my head. And I just, I don't know, I kind of had to be okay, like, using profane language on a record.
Right.
Because I grew up in a conservative Christian Southern household, and, you know, you didn't curse around grandma for sure. And it's just the only way I was able to say it. It was emotive, that word, you know, whatever you want to think about it. But that song, it just took me a long time to write it for whatever reason. And actually, I mean, being with my wife and her giving me the courage to finish that song and Cadillac too, those were the last two that I finished on the record. So let's start there.
And so when you're pulling like the theme of the record together and Mood Swings, are you just writing forward and then slowly seeing a common theme, or were you trying to get a theme when you were going through the process, or both?
Yeah, well, the theme kind of presented itself to us. You know, we started to see a pattern developing, and once we had it, we latched onto it and we really, you know, watered it and watched it grow. It was great.
So currently with Mood Swings, you're on tour, and you're going to be on tour for the foreseeable future. At time of taping, you're in L.A., which we love it, and you're going to be playing the Wiltern. Mm-hmm. You talked about playing the Grand Ole Opry. So is there any kind of place in particular while you're on tour you're looking forward to playing? Somewhere new, somewhere exciting, somewhere going back to that you just love?
Wow. Well, we're going to spend a little time in South Dakota. We'll be back in South Dakota with Chris Stapleton, and we always love going out and playing with him. And we have some friends of ours are going to take us around and take us to their reservation and show us around some Native American culture and really show us, you know, some really beautiful, you know, true American stuff. So we're really excited to get out in this beautiful country out there.
Awesome. We were having some banter before you came in with some of the guys. They're great. I mean, I can tell why you guys have a great camaraderie and are brothers. Someone had mentioned something about Tales from the Tour Bus, Michael Judge's cartoon, but do you have any funny stories of being on tour?
I mean, I don't know how many I could share here. there's some that'll get you into trouble and some that, you know, it's just, to me, it's just the mundane, like, hours that you spend just kind of create the humor in a lot of ways. Like, I don't know, man, just, you know, the nights where you're smoking a cigarette in front of the 7-Eleven and it's just, the light's just, like, barely flickering. And then, like, it's 4 in the morning and you're in, you know, bumfuck Florida, and, like, a minivan, like, pulls up just, like, rickety, and, like, the door opens and like a full mariachi band gets out, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? It's like, that's the kind of stuff that makes me laugh. It's like, what are you guys doing right now? Where are you going somewhere? Did you just play a gig, or are you going to a gig? You're all fully dressed in your mariachi gear. It's really confusing. And they kept coming out of the van, and I was like, this is really weird.
Clown then, car, mariachi.
Yeah, and there was an alligator in the pond. I mean, just those kind of nights to me are just a friendly reminder of like why I do what I do, because you really get to see a lot of this country that a lot of people don't get to see.
Definitely. I love that stuff. I love when you have, you know, like those unanswered questions. I think like not answering it makes it fun.
Yeah.
Because you're like, we never knew what those mariachis were doing.
Still,
and that alligator.
Still don't. I mean, yeah, it's a mystery.
That's crazy. And so then, I guess, so when it's all said and done, you have such already a great legacy. But like, thinking just in general, like if people only know one thing about you, what do you want them to know?
That I was honest. That's all I want. I just want people to hear me. And I want people to feel heard by me. That's all that really matters to me. And I want to be remembered as somebody that loved strong and deeply and honestly.
And if you were going to give, I guess, advice to the next generation of up-and-coming musicians coming up, what would you tell them?
I mean, it's tough, man. Like, I kind of got in right before it was like, you know, you had to be on TikTok or Instagram, mm-hmm. and you have to do the content thing, because it's so hard to do that and not let it fully consume you, because it's literally, you know, the whole structure of it is likes, clicks, more validation.
Mm-hmm.
I need it.
Yeah.
And we all seek validation, and right. that's fine, but you got to be doing it, you know, to heal something within you, and you got to be creating art for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get wrapped up in that whole content thing. Like, you know, I would just advise the next generation of musicians just to not lose sight of why we do what we do. It's a medium to be able to speak honestly and to, you know, find a little absolution and resolution through songs and lyrics, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree. And I know that, you know, it's a means to an end with content of getting stuff done and out there. So then as we wrap up, we have one more great song from you. We're doing the title track to yeah. Mood Swings. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the title track, Mood Swings, that's the first song I recorded for the record. First day I went to Shangri-La, hung out with Rick all day, and we just talked about music and life and all this, and listened to a lot of demos. And then this one I'd just written like the week previous, so I didn't have a demo for it. But he left and went to dinner, and Jason later, the engineer, was like, "You got anything? You want to just cut something now just for fun?" And I said, "You know, I got this song," and, you know, I laid it down the acoustic, the acoustic and the vocal. Then I did the bass, and then we put a drum machine on it, the old rhythm ace.
Mm-hmm.
It just worked. And then, like, I did a piano thing, and what else? Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, that song, that track was finished in, like, 35 minutes. And, like, it was just a good indication of, like, we were on something cool. The rest of the record, I mean, you know, there were some challenges, but, like, mm-hmm. that song coming out that quickly was really, really the nudge I needed, you know, to complete the rest of the record. But, yeah.
Definitely. Well, we're looking forward to hearing it. This is 88.5, the SoCal Sound Sessions with Marcus King. And we're getting to the title track of Mood Swings. Let's listen up.
To the ground. I know it won't make much sense, but baby, my only one I feel safe around. I feel like I can really be myself around you. My mood swings like a pendulum, I can't break loose no. I feel like I can really be myself around you. I've always sacrificed anything that brought me happiness for emptiness, but in exchange for my pain, I maintain inspiration, 'cause heartache is my medication. I feel like I can really be myself around you. Swing like a pendulum, I can't break loose, no. I feel like I can really be myself around you. I feel like I can really be myself around you.
So, Marcus, it was great chatting with you today.
You too,
Thank
Cliff.
You so much for being here. Good luck on the tour and everything.
Thanks.
And if you want to point people at a place to get more information about the tour and you, where's the best place to go?
MarcusKingOfficial.com. You can't go wrong there. You can get information about Curfew Foundation there, tour dates. You can get, but I'd also, really push you to go to your local record store, pick up a copy of that vinyl. You know, that's the best way to listen to it.
Oh, well, I'll definitely be doing that because I love vinyl and I'm going to get it all dialed in, listen to the whole record top to bottom, which you should do as well. Mood Swings is out right now by Marcus King. You can catch him on tour for the foreseeable future. Go to his website. You can also see more of these SoCal Sound sessions by subscribing here. Click the subscribe at the SoCal Sound or thesocalsound.org. We'll see you back next time.
The SoCal Sound Sessions are a production of 88.5 FM, The SoCal Sound. Session hosted by Cliff Beach. Audio recorded and mixed by Tristan Dolce, edited by Matt Blake. The SoCal Sound is a public service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. Broadcasting over the air at 88.5 FM and streaming on the web and through the app at thesocalsound.org.